Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Al Trasik, the Intelligence Community's Chief Information Officer. Al, welcome back to the show.
Jason, great to be back here.
Actually, it's been more than 2 years since you're on my show, which, you know, seems like a long time, but, you know, I've gotten to catch up with you in other ways and other members of the intelligence community and the CIOs there. So let's jump right into the priority that is the priority, the EyeSight program. What is the latest? How EyeSight is already making a difference in promoting integration?
We've had tremendous progress since the last time I've been here. EyeSight's been in place now for about 3 years. I'm really pleased to report today that the foundational services are in place and they're operational. We are now in what we are calling the adoption phase, and we can discuss more of that as we go on here. Let me first answer your specific questions about the impact to employees and their mission, and then on the intelligence integration piece, which is one of the major goals of EyeSight. In today's really complex world, our analysts have to have access to very sophisticated technology, analytical tools, and a lot of data to perform their respective missions. And they need these innovative tools that operate on large volumes of a variety of data sets to be able to discover, analyze, and create new information. So, you know, as part of EyeSight, we really want to find a way to provide the very best for these analysts in both the tool sets and then the data that they operate on. So let me be a little more specific. So with EyeSight, you know, what we've done is we provided an enterprise cloud platform that really provides elastic computing and data storage. So for the first time in our history, our developers have instant access to near unlimited computing capacity. That means they can develop tools and advanced analytics, the advanced analytics I just talked about. They can do it very rapidly and efficiently. This was not something that we were able to do before. In the old days, we had to wait for infrastructure to be able to respond and to provide capabilities. That's instant now with the infrastructure that we're put in. And so the analysts and the developers are starting to do this. In fact, as an example, at NSA, developers and analysts sit side by side in a concept called the iCafe, and the developers quickly code and they integrate the functionality the mission needs right there on the spot. And they weren't able to do this before, but they can do it now because of this underlying cloud environment. Secondly, it really is a lot about integration. And the thing that we're doing to really advance that is we've decided from a strategy approach to treat all data as an IC asset. That means we inventory it, we index it, and we store it in similar ways where it can be a lot more useful for those that need access to it. We've established a data services activity to ingest, collate, and index the data with the same indices, and we're employing a consistent set of extraction tools. And by doing so, our analysts now have access to potentially much more than they've had before. Now, that, of course, assumes that they have the authority to see that data, which we still protect. And then the third piece of this, obviously, is and another goal of EyeSight, is the safeguarding protections that we built in from the very start to allow information to be shared to only those who are authorized to see it. So we can now, with this new architecture, both share and protect data. So without getting into numbers about how much data we've actually ingested, which is pretty significant at this point, I will tell you that we are making very good progress in ingesting data in the same way now and co-locating it in similar places so it can be a lot more useful to mission.
All right, so there's a ton you just went through, and there's a lot of good things that I want to follow up on. But let me go back actually to the beginning piece. I didn't realize, you know, 3 years flies by when it comes to programs like EyeSight. I'm sure you're thinking it's probably the longest 3 years of your life in many ways because this has been a huge, heavy lift. But give me a sense, when you talk about the difference between the operational phase and the adoption phase, what does that mean?
Remember, we didn't ask for any new money. We used our existing budgets. We redirected those dollars. And basically what we've done for about the first 2.5 years of this activity was to build this parallel function, this foundation. So when I say the foundation is in, it means we have the cloud services in place. We have the desktop in place and being used by many thousands of people. We have the security architecture in place. So it's all set up and ready for the agencies now to start moving their workloads in. And we call that the adoption phase.
Obviously, agencies are moving their workloads in. I know, for instance, talking to the DIA CIO, the desktop is being used within the Defense Intelligence Agency. I know talking with the NGA CIO recently, same thing. More and more people are using it. How long is this adoption phase? Because as we've talked about, you know, this is, I think, full operational capability or whatever we're going to eventually call that is still a good 2-3 years away.
To help that, let me just go over the current statistics of where we are for the various aspects of EyeSight. So the desktop, a very important piece of this because it unifies all of the intelligence community users on the same basic software base, the same kind of collaboration tools, something that we've never had before across all agencies. Right now, we have about 16,000 users, primarily at NGA and DIA, who are using the first phase of DTE or DTE Part 1. We're soon going to expand that from the 16,000. I think their plan is to scale that to about 50,000, which will primarily complete those two agencies. And then there's an acquisition in place right now for the phase two of that, which will then open up the aperture for the rest of the community. So we still believe we're going to meet our initial timelines of trying to get the preponderance of IC users on that single desktop using cloud services by 2018. The other service we have in place is called the Applications Mall. NSA is the service provider for that, and we have over 400 applications that never before exposed from within agency stovepipes. Now they're exposed in a common way where they can be reutilized by others. Or, in fact, over time, just like some of the commercial app stores, apps that aren't used and used extensively, you know, they die on a vine. And so we hope to use this as a way to rationalize all the various apps that we have across the community. The Security Coordination Center is something new since the last time we talked. We now have established the acronym as the SEC. It provides end-to-end cyber defense monitoring responsibilities for all of EyeSight. And I'm currently managing the SEC under my organization, but ultimately we intend to, just like the other services, have one of the primary agencies run that on our behalf. Our identification, authentication, authorization services, CIA and NSA are the service providers for this, and they will be bringing on a more centralized architecture in the next year or two. We are currently still using the federated system in order to enable this foundational architecture to operate today. And it works fine, but it doesn't have all the capabilities that we'll need in the future, at least not in an enterprise way. The IC Cloud is really an exciting part of this and really the foundational elements of EyeSight, the big foundational elements of EyeSight. And of course, you know that NSA and CIA are our service providers for that. They do this jointly. And we have two clouds, but we call it one cloud. We call it the IC Cloud. So NSA has the GovCloud that they have produced for us. There are pieces of that cloud that are actually optimized to do, you know, big data analytics and things like that. And that's what we're leveraging from NSA. CIA, as you know, went and did an acquisition for commercial capabilities. And so they brought in Amazon Web Services, who built an instantiation of AWS on our property, on our top secret network. And we're leveraging all the innovation that comes with that. It's an exact duplicate of what they do on the internet side. And so the scaling capability, the innovation capabilities that Amazon produces on that side, those are all available to us. And what we are trying very hard not to do is to overlay government bureaucracy on top of this, except for a security layer, of course, which we have done. But we want to be able to continue that, to bring in that innovation. And one of the exciting pieces of that is the marketplace. I think you know that CIA made an announcement recently in their partnership with AWS. They are going to bring in the commercial marketplace over time so we can leverage all those innovative capabilities that software vendors are putting on the marketplace. That's exciting for us because it not only brings in the innovation, but it also brings in a business model where you pay by the drink, if you will, for how much you use it. And that's kind of the new licensing model for that kind of software. So we're very excited about that. And then just recently, I think you've heard the CIA CIO mention about the partnership they had with Cloudera and bringing in their data hub on C2S. And by the way, C2S, when I use that, that's what we call the AWS instantiation in here. And then lastly, NRO is our network requirements and engineering service provider. And what we're trying to do there is to build standard network designs for both our campus area networks and our wide area networks so we can be a lot more consistent and drive out cost and actually be more effective in the way that we do our routing of our data. So that's kind of that captures where we are right now. And all that, you know, has really established a very robust and rigorous foundation that allows us now to begin to move a lot more workload into this.
All right. Well, that was a ton of great information, and there's so much to go over. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, then we're going to jump into all of this very, very quickly and talk a ton more about what you're doing. My guest today is Al Taurasik, the Intelligence Community's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Al Taurasik, the Intelligence Community's Chief Information Officer. Now, Al, before break, you gave us a great, great update on EyeSight. There's so much to go into. One of the things you mentioned very early on in our conversation was something that's happening within the NSA. It's called the iCafe, where you have developers and analysts sitting next to each other. And this is a fascinating concept. And it, to me, just based on what you've said, it's really happening because of the changes you made, because of how the cloud is being used within the intelligence community. Talk a little bit about how the iCafe really is maybe the model for going forward in many ways across the intelligence community.
It's the model for any organization that's dealing with the kinds of capabilities, the powerful capabilities that cloud provides for you. But for in our case here, NSA has demonstrated that this works very well for them. This is not the typical project where you receive requirements from your users and then build something and then you present it back to them and it's not what they want. So in some ways, this is kind of like agile development where you have, you're working with the mission directly and producing things directly right in front of them so they can actually get benefit from it. So we're using that model now. We're starting to use it across the community. I'll introduce right now the idea of that we have in place, and actually it's a group we have in place called the Mission Users Group, the MUG. And this is a group that's actually driving the mission adoption of these new services. The MUG is very interested in this iCafe. In fact, they are trying to lead the way here for the entire community to put this thing in place for community use. So developers from across the various agencies, the idea would be that they would be working with their mission folks and across the other agencies as well to actually drive new capabilities on top of this cloud infrastructure. We couldn't do this before because we didn't have that kind of, you know, capacity and capability at the infrastructure layer to allow this. The MUG, by the way, is co-chaired by very senior officers out of CIA and DIA and mission representatives from most of the primary agencies sit around a table. And they help pull together these various kinds of concepts and what we call integrated mission threads to kind of drive the mission adoption of EyeSight.
You brought up Agile, and that was the first thing that came to my mind. And I definitely want to talk more about the MUG in a second, because one, it's a great name. You know, there's so many headlines I can think of right now. But when we talk about Agile, is that within the intelligence community already? Are you seeing instances where Agile is working or happening? Because when you talk about the digital services that's happening in the civilian world, that's really a precursor to where I think the White House, OMB, is driving the civilians. From your perspective and the intelligence community, does Agile make sense? Does it work for you just like it would work for any other agency?
So when I was the CIO at CIA, we brought in Agile and we made it work for us. I'm not as familiar with what the other agencies have been using, but I'm sure that others have done so. We had success at CIA with Agile, and I think now it's moved to more of a DevOps kind of thing as well. We're doing that. But iCafe, in some ways, is maybe a little bit less structured than Agile was. Agile, you know, required training, and you had even the mission folks had some training. But the important part of both of those concepts, and including iCafe here, is that you have mission people sitting side by side and actually watching the developers and influencing the direction of how these tools get built for them. So at the end of this, you save a lot of time because you're not waiting for this long development cycle. I'm sure that in this process that, you know, mistakes get made and they can quickly go back and correct these things. So that's what the concept is.
All right. And I know that's something to follow up with an essay on in the future. So we will definitely do that. Let's go back to the Mission Users Group, the MUG. This is also another fascinating concept because I think it relates back to something that we heard recently in the community from, I guess, the former director of the DIA, David Shedd, who talked about how EyeSight really is about a culture change, and maybe it's not happening as quickly as one hoped. It seems like just the way you described the Mission Users Group, that maybe this culture change is happening, and this is really the institutionalization of that culture change.
Any organization that goes through the kinds of changes that we're putting in place is going to have cultural and bureaucratic kind of resistance. So this is not new to the IC. So we're facing the same kind of issue. So David is absolutely correct that culture just doesn't like change. So we knew that. I remember one of the first briefings I did for our executive committee, I basically told them that technology was not the most difficult part of this. The change would be the most difficult part. So, you know, and most people are very comfortable hugging their own servers and controlling their own data and thinking that that's the ultimate solution. But that doesn't work very well in an effort to, you know, to integrate the community like the DNI is trying to do. So, you know, EyeSight really is not only the architectural change, but it's also a business model change. We're moving from a model where every agency does their own IT to a model where we go to a consumer and producer kind of business model. And in some cases, there will be some IC elements, probably some of the smaller ones that run IT today, that won't run IT tomorrow. They'll buy the service from one of their sister agency as a service provider. There'll be some agencies that will be both a producer and a consumer. For instance, our service providers will be both. So that's the change that is occurring here. So some people are being asked to give up what they have controlled all these years, and that in itself causes some issues. So what are we doing about that? The MUG is actually one of the very important elements of this change effort. Having the mission folks at the senior levels with representatives at the senior levels from across the community driving the change and putting together the concepts of how we should do these integrated threads across the community and bringing in more of an enterprise look at applications and prioritizing what data sets need to be ingested, that is really helping the mission elements to transition into this and become more comfortable with it. The other important part of the culture change is having consistent leadership and consistent prioritization by our leadership. The DNI has been very clear from day one, and he remains very clear today. This is his number one priority for the community because it enables the integration that is his number one goal for the community. His principal deputy, Stephanie O'Sullivan, continues to meet with the deputy directors of the big five agencies, as we call it, the primary agencies, on a weekly basis. And their role is to drive this change from a leadership level and to remove the impediments so folks like myself and the other CIOs and even the mission elements can find it easier to be able to move in this direction. And then, of course, through any kind of change effort, you have to communicate a lot. And we do that. We communicate to our workforces through, you know, newsletters. We have conferences. In fact, the CIO has traditionally had our own IT conference, and the mission, the MUG, had their conference. The MUG's been in place for about 2 years. For the first time, we're combining those conferences and having a single conference to show the unity and to also show that mission is deeply involved in this. So all these efforts help us in this change. But at the end of the day, you can't predict on a tight schedule how everything is going to play out, and you're dealing with things all the time. But having these things in place certainly helps.
Can you talk a little bit about how the MUG is impacting the day-to-day or the month-to-month implementation of EyeSight? I mean, you may not be able to talk specifics, but what's maybe an example that comes to mind where there is maybe a challenge and having the mission people there helped overcome the challenge? Does anything comes to mind?
One thing that the MUG took on initially was to create what we call integrated mission threats. So if you think of a problem, say counterterrorism, with their group, they put together the priorities for the types of tools and the kind of data that needed to come together from an enterprise perspective to be able to improve mission effectiveness through that. And there's a series of others that I can't talk about here today, but they laid out 8 to 10 integrated mission threads. Integrated means that a single agency is no longer kind of doing that piece. It's multiple agencies working on a problem set together. The example I can give you is that at the end of January, they did their first kind of demo only using, they had a number of analysts from across the community, 50, 60 analysts, maybe more, working just on iSight tools and iSight data on a particular mission thread to experiment how effective it could be. So this is not bringing in their homegrown tool that they had in their agency, but this is using capabilities that exist today. And with that, they were able to discover some things that they weren't able to do before, which is good news to us. Now, on the back end of that, the CIOs and the IT teams are watching to see what are the problems they're encountering and how, you know, what are the issues that we still have to address from the infrastructure perspective, like are they getting access to the data they need? How hard was it to give them the data that they needed to use and on all those kinds of things? So we learned a lot from that. And this is kind of just the beginning. I think you're going to see a lot more of this going forward.
Well, as much as you can say, good news then? I mean, were you pleased with that back end? Did it work like you hoped it would? Obviously, there's always tweaks, always improvements. But overall, did you guys walk away going, wow, that is proof that we're heading down a great path?
So from where I sit, I see it very objectively from an IC perspective. I thought it was a great production. And it made me feel good because of all the hard work that we've been putting in over the last few years to create this new capability for them. I saw great results. There are obviously things, there's after action reports on things we have to deal with, which I'm not going to talk about today, but and we'll refine those over time. But great results from the analyst perspective and also great results from the IT perspective.
All right. That's good news because obviously the culture piece is always the most difficult. And I know that when Mr. Shedd made those comments, a lot of ears perked up because whenever there is a huge culture change like you talked about, that usually is the one obstacle that people or agencies have tended not to overcome. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump into looking forward and some other things you talked about where iSight is going. My guest today is Al Triasek, the Intelligence Community's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Al Triasek, the Intelligence Community's Chief Information Officer. Al, we spent the first part of the show really talking about where iSight is going, the progress it's making, all the different pieces that are coming together. You gave us a little bit of a heads up of what 2015 is going to look like, specifically around the MUG, again, great acronym, Mission Users Group. You also talked about a marketplace. Let's delve into that just a little bit more. What is that and how is it going to work?
Yeah, the marketplace is something that Amazon put together for their business side on the internet. And what they do is they strike partnerships with software vendors, tool vendors, and they make them available on their instance on the commercial side. And so what they're going to do, and you know, I talked about innovation, how we're going to use this to bring innovation into the community. They're going to bring in Marketplace, and Doug Wolf at CIA, the CIO, has already announced this in partnership with Amazon. They're going to bring it in. What we don't quite yet know is how it's all going to be sequenced and all that. But here's what the beauty of this is. The tools that we need and any kind of advancements in analytics and things like that that will be available on the commercial market. In partnership with Amazon, we might be able to bring those in through the marketplace. There's a number of those kinds of capabilities are available today on the commercial side of this, and we've made it so it can happen in our world here as well. The benefit to us, of course, is that you can bring these things on very quickly, and then there's the whole enterprise licensing model that comes with it. So I mentioned before, you know, kind of buy by the drink. It's called metered service. The beauty of the Amazon Web Services is that you can go on just like you do in the commercial side. You go on the internet and you use your credit card and you buy how much compute and storage you need. We can do the exact same thing on the community side on our top secret network. And then in addition to that, when you have these tools available in the marketplace, they come with the licensing already as part of it. So you know what your costs are. When you stop using the tool for whatever reason, it turns off. You don't have this, you know, you pay ahead for a year or two for a license. You don't need that anymore. So that's the real benefit for us, the innovation piece and then the kind of the business model that comes with it.
When you're moving to buy by the drink, how does that work from an acquisition, from a spending perspective? Because I think that's one of the big challenges that every other CIO I speak with says to me is, we want to use cloud, we're using cloud, but how do we ensure we're not buying too much cloud or not enough cloud? And as we increase, do we have the ability to, because you, like you guys, every agency is looking 2 years out with their budget, and you guys are probably looking even further out. How did you make that work?
So the truth of the matter is that in the old model, we have traditionally bought more than we needed to add capacity, never really knowing all the time if we're actually going to use it all. Developers have locked in dev environments and storage and all that where it sat idle for a long, long time and we didn't use it. And, you know, we had to pay for it and pay the continuing maintenance on it. The new model is that you buy what you need, and when you no longer need it, you shut it down. That's the real benefit for us. Now, on the enabling side of that, we have all these acquisition rules around us, and having the procurement executives and the acquisition executives involved in this, and making sure that they can enable us to take advantage of this is in process. So we're not only changing the IT workforce, we're not only changing the mission workforce and adapting to this new model. All the other enablers, the budget and finance people, you know, how do you pay for this? And then the acquisition and procurement people, how do we buy this? And does it still meet all the FAR regulations and everything else? Those are all the kinds of things that are in change mode right now and in various phases of, you know, adapting to this new model. And that, you know, I can understand where that's going to continue to be a developing process, but it is the new model that we are going to be working in.
Have you tested this out? I mean, I know we talked about the iCafe, for instance, and the marketplace is just getting stood up, but have you guys anywhere else done pilots or prototypes to say, can we actually buy by the drink and does it work? Because I definitely want to talk about the savings that iSight is bringing or the potential savings. So start with, have you tested it out? And then we'll jump into the savings.
Absolutely. We haven't tested out the marketplace yet, or maybe CIA has dabbled a little bit with it, but certainly on the Amazon Web Services Cloud, the C2S, we have for sure. And developers have, the first thing we have to do is create accounts. So we knew where the budget was coming from to pay for those instances that they ordered up. But the developers are on there. We're achieving a lot more capacity or using a lot more capacity that was available from the very beginning. And we continue to do that. So yes, there's production workloads on C2S today. And what's happening is that the elements that are using those are getting the bills already. Although the first year we had what's called the guaranteed minimum buy that came with the contract from Amazon that we already paid for. But they're getting the real bills that starting in July of this year, they'll actually be paying those real costs.
And initially, when we talked a few years ago, there were some estimates of 20 to 25% of savings through IT because of iSight. Are you there yet? Do you know if you're there yet, or will you be there? Give me a sense of what you're already seeing. Because I know, again, it's still an IOC, so it's still early.
So remember, when I talk about 20, 25%, it was a target, and a target that we still believe is achievable. We knew from the beginning that the savings for this or cost avoidance will really come about at the back end of this effort when the agencies transition their legacy workloads or new capabilities and reduce their and retire their legacy. That's when it'll come, because the cost of using this infrastructure overall, unit cost, will be less than what we have today. So we're doing other things. When you think about moving to a single desktop, there's 17 IC elements. It includes agencies and elements within departments. Each one, for the most part, had their own engineering shop for desktops. Now we have one engineering shop for a desktop, and that's DTE, and that's being run by NGA and DIA as partners. So we're reducing costs by consolidating those kinds of activities. But you'll see most of this towards the back end of this, and it'll continue on even after we reached the 2018 mark, where I think we'll have the majority of IC users on this new infrastructure.
Do you get a sense that this iSight effort is a perfect example of spending a little bit to save a lot? Because I think that gets lost sometimes in the discussion that CIOs try to make to the budget people, to the agency heads that says if we can just spend a little bit today, the back end savings will be great. I mean, and it all comes back to, do you have the baseline of how much you're spending today, which you guys either seem to have done over the last 2 years or you had from the beginning?
From the beginning, we had rough estimates of what we were spending. So yes, this is a good case of where you'd need to invest a little bit and move them, in our case, move the money to where we needed it to go. So for instance, the service providers needed to build up the capabilities while we're still all operating on the legacy infrastructures. So we moved money in those directions, and that allowed them to begin to scale their capabilities for, you know, IC requirements. We do believe that over time, as I said before, as the legacy either gets retired or gets refactored to move into this infrastructure, the underlying unit cost of IT will be reduced. And remember, again, we didn't ask for any new money, which is the traditional way of building programs. This is not being managed as a program per se.
You said earlier that the full operating capability, whatever that actually is going to look like, was still on track by 2018. Talk a little bit about the schedule. What could impact the schedule, and how are you ensuring that all the other 17 or so intelligence community organizations are staying on schedule to meet those goals?
I don't believe we'll ever have the traditional FOC in this. There'll always be evolution of new capabilities and things like that. But the basic foundational elements will be scaled in the appropriate way by the timelines that we had talked about, 2018 or so. And I think most of the users will be on the desktop by then. So the schedules we have for that pretty much show that we're pretty much on track to achieve that. The adoption is really the most difficult part of this, because we have allowed the agencies to build their own roadmaps for transition. Only the agencies know what their contractual vehicles are, where the on-ramps and off-ramps would be for them moving their workloads into iSight. And so they have been working on these for a little bit over a year. They've matured them. For the next 12-month period, we pretty much know what's going to happen. Beyond that, they're continue to fine-tune. But it's really up to them. And the way that we govern this is, once they determine that this is, they're pretty sure about the schedule for the next 12 months or 18 months, then we load up their schedules and integrate them into our overall integrated schedule. And so then we track this through our governance process, not only at my level with the CIOs. We meet every 2 weeks and we track these issues and schedules, and we try to make sure things stay on schedule. But then also the principal deputy director and the deputies of the agencies, they're looking at this and making sure that they can stay on schedule, and they'll work on the issues and the impediments to try to remove things out of the way that might stand in the way of us achieving success.
So it seems like the accountability is happening in two places. It's happening at your level, the CIO level, and then it's happening, I guess, maybe one level above you with the deputy director and the other deputy directors from each of the organizations. And then it's happening from the bottom up through the MUG. So is that why, in some ways, this is moving forward at a pace that you seem pleased with?
Absolutely. And there's one more level, the DNI's level with the XCOM, and this is the directors of the agencies. They are engaged in this, and they are also tracking. So I report to the XCOM almost every time they meet with a status update. But by the time it gets up there, a lot of the issues have been solved already. And so it's always has been, at least to this day, a pretty good news story.
And I imagine if there are any real problems, DNI probably solves them very quickly.
Did I mention before that this is the DNI's number one priority?
I think you may have said that. We're going to take a quick break. My guest today is Al Tarasic, the Intelligence Community's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest today is Al Tarasic, the Intelligence Community's Chief Information Officer. Now, Al, before break, we were talking a little bit about the savings and the potential of savings. We spent almost the entire show talking about iSight. Now, I'm going to venture off here and say, there may be a few other things you're maybe working on. Are there any other priorities you're really focusing on over the next year or so?
Well, iSight is my number one priority, and just about everything we do falls under that, whether it's safeguarding and all the cyber things that are going on, or mobility. Mobility is important to us at the top secret level. I can't say that we've solved that problem yet, but there are efforts going on to include some level of mobility within our desktop program, the DTE program. So that's really all about I can say at this point, I think.
And I know the challenge around that is the classified nature of the work you guys do, and how can you have a phone or some kind of mobile device going back to that classified network. Generally speaking, do you hope to have some kind of, again, pilot prototype, something that could happen that can prove whether this can work or not in the next year or so?
There are pilots that are going on right now within agencies, but we don't yet have an overall enterprise strategy for this. So this is one of the things that we are working on now under, of course, again, under the EyeSight umbrella to be able to see how far we can go.
All right. Maybe something to follow up with you when you come on the show next time. I want to go back to one thing you mentioned earlier about procurement. We got to talking about cloud and how you buy specific services by the drink, but you also sit in a role that you get a bird's eye view and a lot of authority and a lot of accountability around the procurement itself of the intelligence community when it comes to IT. Talk a little bit about that and how you oversee procurement and some of the governance.
So one of the real important parts of this right now in the phase that we're in is we actually have to stop buying IT the way we've traditionally bought IT. And so I chair what's called an acquisition review board for EyeSight, and we review various kinds of acquisitions related to IT, and most of them are aligned to EyeSight. What we've done is in partnership with the senior procurement executive for the IC and then the security senior procurement executive and acquisition executives from across the agencies is work with them to make sure that they're reviewing contract renewals and the various types of procurements that traditionally have occurred inside agency walls, and to make sure that those procurements, to question those procurements first, to make sure that they're being aligned to EyeSight. The default right now is to use EyeSight unless there's some peculiar case that we can't meet a requirement right now. So then we would allow something like that to go forward. But we have to be able to control that. Otherwise, we continue to, you know, have growth in other areas instead of moving these workloads to EyeSight. One of the other interesting things that we've been after for and working for the last couple years is the idea of creating IC enterprise licenses for some of the major software products that we use. The goal here, of course, is to get volume discount, to bring in cloud grants to allow us to use these software tools on the cloud, which many of the vendors have required. And so we have we've struck deals now. I think we had originally the top 15. We've struck deals now with about 11 of them. And so now we have use by all agencies, whoever wants to use these licenses and transition away from their own licenses, and they can now leverage these. And with it, it comes, in most cases, better cost. And then the second one is the ability to use it within the EyeSight infrastructure and the cloud services.
11 of 15, I got to ask, are those other four on tap?
Yeah, they're on tap. It just takes time to work through these, but we've made very good progress in some of those.
So I know that DoD has been deep into enterprise-wide licenses for years. I know GSA has the Smart Buy initiative. Are you trying to piggyback on either of those?
Absolutely. And when we started this, we established terms and conditions that we were trying to stay true to for all of these enterprise licenses. We learned from what DoD has done. We looked at GSA. And so we leveraged all that, lessons learned wise, and implemented that within our community.
We're talking a lot about procurement, the enterprise licenses. One thing comes to mind is vendors. What should they know about working with your office? I know a lot of them listen to my show. So what's your message to them?
Every time I speak to various forums where industry and our vendor partners attend, we talk very much heart to heart about what this really means, that we are trying to save money and remove labor through this consolidation. And what I encourage them to do is to focus on the upper parts of the stack, because that's where mission resides. That's where innovation is going to occur. The infrastructure in some cases can be seen as a utility that's there for them all the time. The mission no longer has to wait for that. So we want our industry partners to bring in innovation at the upper levels of this and to work with mission directly. Right now, every agency needs help in doing the transition as well. Many of them are getting the help from the vendors that they already have, but they could always use new ideas. So that's really where the opportunities are going to be in the future for innovation at the mission level. And that's where I've been trying to point the vendors to and our industry partners to. And I will add that for industry partners, the first thing I tell them is that I don't buy anything. You need to go to the agencies because that's where the procurements for these kinds of tools and analytics and things like that, that's where they're going to occur.
I think that's an important message because a lot of times people I know, I've haven't seen you at conferences, that AFSEA type conferences, they always want to come and talk to you. And well, I'm sure you're happy to talk to some. You probably have not a lot of money either. So I think that's an important point. You did mention a phase two procurement. I know it gets into sensitivities. Is there any update you can give, or is it in the selection process and you got to stay out of it?
Yeah, that one is about DTE and it's in the selection process. We are also right now working on a potential procurement for enterprise management. We have to establish a more robust kind of capability at the EyeSight level. And so that will be coming around here over this next year as well.
All right. I know we could talk a lot longer, but unfortunately we are out of time. My guest this week is Al Trasik, the Intelligence Community's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Al, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Jason, thank you. It was a pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.